Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about the fundamentals of money management. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple, brought to you by Stonehill Wealth Management, my wealth management firm where we help people guide their monetary energy from here into the future, protecting its value from the ravages of inflation. And it's brought to you by WealthBuildingMadeSimple.us, where I share my weekly thoughts on just, you know, around money, what's going on in the world, mindful thinking, things that help you raise your financial awareness and emotional intelligence around money. Today, we are talking about the fundamentals of money management, right? I'm going to start it off talking science, but bear with me. I'm not going to go down a deep rabbit hole, but I think it's really important. I feel like if more of us understood like the laws of physics, which are like the laws of nature, it would allow us to sort through a lot of the noise that, as Steve and I call them, humans, you know, create with our irrationality, right? Because I think about it, like, whether you're an atheist or a spiritual person, everybody believes that there's some higher order of intelligence organizing things in the world, right? I mean, this planet spins, it's spinning in a space of infinite nothingness, moving at a perfect speed in alignment with the sun, spinning in around and keeping us alive with everything that we need, right? There's some sort of higher intelligence or system, which is the same thing as saying intelligence, that keeps everything like working properly. And so I'm saying it to say it's physics helps you understand like how that system works. And then it helps you know when humans are being foolish, when they're not. Meaning like humans are very foolish when we try and like say, oh, this is the way the system that has created everything works, but we're going to do something opposite to the system. And then like all the ancient teachers in spiritual teachings tell you that like the Tower of Babel falls, right? I mean, that's what that means. Like when humans replace our finite minds with the infinite mind of the universe, it doesn't work. It may work for a moment in time, right? But like our knowledge is completely irrelevant, like to the evolution of life on the planet, right? So this is why I return sometimes to these principles. You know, for my science nerds, and then I weave in the spiritual stuff because, like, to me, like, principles are principles, and I just want to help people get it where they can get it so they can make informed decisions today. But let's go to this fundamental principle of, like, thermodynamics or energy conformation, right, which basically explains how things go from the invisible to the visible, like, not in a spiritual way. I'm talking about, like, scientifically, right? So in order for which is really the same thing. But in order for the abundant energy in the universe to become tangible, which means it becomes scarce, right? So first, energy is invisible all around us, right? This infinite, you know, ever-expanding universe that we live in. So there's energy all around us that we can't see. But it becomes matter, right? And that's a process, right? A transformative process of energy going to matter, right? It's sort of a chain reaction, right? If you study the process of anything, when something goes from like, you know, water to mist to ice, you know, or in all when you know as things kind of transform, you have like a chain reaction, right? I also call it like a cycle. But there's a transformative cycle that things go through when they go from being invisible to invisible, right? And that process. Is you study it and you look at it, the simplest version, it happens in everything, but the simplest version is you look at how the our galaxy was formed, for example, right? I'm to keep me from going super nerd, let's just stick with the Earth, right? And then you go, oh, like, why do we not fall off the Earth, right? Well, it's because the Earth has more mass than we do, right? The Earth has more mass than meteorites that pass by the Earth. The Earth has more mass than anything that's, you know, closest to us. So, like, since we have less mass, we stick to the Earth, right? If it has more mass, then it has more gravity relative to the things that it's attracting, right? So it's attractive power. Mass is attractive power, right? Why is that important to money management, right? Because that attractive power, right? Once you understand it, I'm going to go through, like, what creates that attractive power, what creates mass, right, around a currency, around money, then it's easier to understand how money gets sucked into different assets. Because people go around saying money is backed by this, money's not backed by that, blah, 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 blah. No, money in a universal concept principle is going to be the money that attracts the most mass, right? So I'm going to continue to talk about it as an intangible, going to a tangible so it can play out. But I don't think, like, money's been multiple different forms, right? Money's been lots of different things. So it's not anything tangible. Like, if you think of money as something tangible, then you misunderstand the principle, right? It's an invisible, abundant energy. And it goes through the same manifestation process as all other matter, right? Or all other ideas. And so, and you see the manifestation of money as something going up in value relative to the currency that we measure in, right? So, for example, we measure things in dollars. So you look at the S&P 500. It is worth $5,000, right? So that meant that the value of owning those stocks, which, by the way, side note, there's not 500 stocks in S&P 500. Just in case you didn't know, just random fact. It's not super important to my point. I just thought you might appreciate that. But it's relatively more valuable to own S&P 500 stocks than dollars, right? Because that basket of stocks has a per share price of 5,000 to 1, right? So, like, there's value relative to owning the unit that we measure that in. And so what attracted that value, right? Or said a different way, what sucked in the value from society into those assets? And it's the process of, like, work, effort, or focused action, right? That's, you know, I think of it like energy and motion, right? And so I'm going to do a Bible verse. I'm going to weave this in here, right? Because I like to, and then I'm going to make it make sense. So I'm going back and forth, right? So Exodus 20:11, for 6 days the Lord made or worked the heavens, the earth, and the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested, right? So here's where I'm going with it. What it's saying is, like, humans, we mirror the Creator. So every civilization that's been built has been built around focused action. You don't have anything valuable unless humans think it's valuable, and then we apply our actions to make it valuable, right? Right? Because when we, like, we can, you have all these cities that are ancient that we're discovering that are crumbled now, but at one point they were beautiful oases and beautiful places that we live because we focused our actions as humans into building up that society. And when we took our focused action away from it, society crumbled. Right? So, like, focused action is what America did over the last 100 years better than anybody, right? We had an economic system that allowed for more relative free thinking. We were able to focus our action and resources around solving problems or creating solutions that consumers needed. And so since our system allowed that energy to flow the most freely and have the most focused, coordinated action, then that's why the S&P 500 is worth so much, right? And you can look at every time period and you will find the wealth flow to the regions that had the most focused and free action, right? And I'm saying focus because focus is not synonymous with like dictator focused energy, right? So if you have a worker that is micromanaged and a worker who is allowed to be free and they have the same competency level, you're going to get more focused action from the one that's more free. So that's why freedom is a very good component of focused action, right? Going back to the universe example, you don't have a dictator dictating the planet of the earth, right? Working together. Like it's a decentralized system of everything working the way it's supposed to on a similar frequency to make things like work, right? It seems from our perspective like chaotic, but when you get to the nuts and bolts of it, it's like beautiful music, everything working in harmony, right? Because everything is able to operate from their own free will. And so same thing with humans, right? You see a lot of wealth when you get that focused action that's free and harmonic, right? And so here's what happens. And this is the human cycle, right? I think of everything like the seasons, because again, that's fundamental when you study physics, the principle of everything has seasons. But humans, we entrust our community leaders to maintain economic system, right? We either pay like some form of like tithe when we use the church as the law, right? I think it was canon law, you know, for Western society, or like so it was a tithe or a tax or rent, right? Rent was when the lords had peasants take care of their land, right? And so that was the easy, tangible way that we paid the managers of the law that kept our system intact. But every civilization, once those managers kind of got outside themselves and start spending too much and not being productive, inflation became a problem, because inflation is a hidden payment to these community leaders, right? It's a way for them to create money or borrow, which is done through borrowing, or they used to shave coins down, but they can create money for them to pay their bills when taxes don't cover the bills, right? Because the leaders know there's only so much money you can pay and have people pay you in taxes before they go, this is too much, I'm not doing that, right? Because there's governments get overthrown easily when they can see the overspending. So inflation always becomes a thing, right, when societies lose their way and get out of balance with their income and expenses, right? And so debt, so you don't, as an individual, right, you don't need to go study every government's balance sheet or, you know, income expenses, go through all that kind of stuff, right? It's good to know, right, especially right now when we have these fiscal policies being presented, right? It's just useful to know, but it's not important, because here's the simple thing that you'll know, and you can look at this throughout every time period. Debt is a manifestation of a system with money leaking out of it because of inflation, right? Like when you see debt building up among the government and the people and the businesses, the entities that do it, then you go, all right, there's some inflation, some hidden inflation going on here, right? That's because things aren't adding up. Because what happens is a system in balance, there's an abundance of resources, because no one feels the need to accumulate and ration resources for later, just in case they're unaffordable in the future, right? When there's balance, well, let me do unbalanced and then I'll use the analogy, right? So a system out of balance, the financially aware actors or people who are financially astute see the currency is going down in value, and they sense it, not by the stated rate by those in charge, because that's not going to, there's no way you can state a rate for each person, because we all spend different things on money on different things. And like, are you going to trust the butcher's dietary advice, right? There's a vested interest for them to lie. So, or mislead the facts, right? So, So the financially aware actors do their due diligence, see the currency is going down in value over time because of the inflation, right? That's what inflation is. And so they buy things and assets that will increase higher than the currency decrease rate, even if they don't need it, right? The financially aware actors, so they accumulate more and more wealth relative to those who are unaware. And as their net worth increases, the banks lend them more money and they buy more. And it's like a self-reinforcing cycle, right? Because they're going, well, man, the currency is going down. I can't keep this money over here because they're making it worthless. I got to buy something. And then the banker's saying, hey, you want to borrow some more money to buy more stuff? They're like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, why not? I'm making more money, so I got to put it somewhere. So it just builds and builds and builds and builds. And what ends up happening is there becomes like a scarcity of resources because financially aware people are accumulating things to protect their value. And then those that are unaware don't know, and it becomes, and the prices of assets and things that, that people value, like, you know, ownership in companies, places to live, right? Rent goes up, and then all that, since rent's going up on the businesses, then they got to charge more for their stuff, right? And so it kind of trickles through the economy. And so some people will say, these greedy rich people, right? If rich people wouldn't be so greedy, then this wouldn't happen. And I was like, judge not, yes, lest ye be judged. Meaning, like, you ask yourself what happened during COVID and they had the Clorox wipes, right? When you went to the store, like, normally when the system is in balance, I go to the grocery store, I buy one Clorox wipe or two or however many we think we're going to need in between our grocery store periods. And I can buy what I need because I trust that when I come back, there'll be plenty for me to have. But during COVID, like, it was hard to find. So when you got to the store and you saw 10 on the shelf, guess what? Like, you weren't thinking about your neighbor. You just bought all 10, right? Just in case when you came back, it was not going to be there, right? And so that's happening at scale, right, in the global economy. And so people are just acting rationally, giving their awareness, right? If you're not aware, then you're left with scarcity. If you're aware, you're like, I'm going to do what's rational based on what I understand, right? And so so this is happening right now across the world with assets and value and money. And so I'm walking you through the capital allocation math that financially aware people go through, right? This is stuff that I wish I would have known sooner, right? But maybe I'm not wish I would have known sooner because I learned it. And it gave me a good perspective. And so, like, I am where I am, and so I'm good. So I'll rephrase that statement. I am where I am, and I'm sharing it with people who wish they would know, who want to know this. And so here's the math. I got $1 million, and I want to send it into the future 5 or 10 years from now and not have it be destroyed by the inflation that I see right now, right? And so, like, their smart wealth managers or their smart money management team will look out and say, all right, let's start looking at different asset classes, right? Cash in the banks paying 5%. I can buy the things I want now that I plan to buy in the future 5 years from now. But, like, not, you know, I can't buy all the groceries I need because that's going to spoil. I bought some real estate. So I can buy the things that I want to buy. But, you know, storage costs, right, for 5 years, I don't really want to store all that stuff. And there's cost to it. And so they got to do an analysis, do it. Like, if it's when you add up storage cost and what you think it's going to grow by relative to the currency going down in value, it may make sense, but their advisors make the determination. That's not a great investment for me right now. Gold's been going up by 10% for the last 5 years. The S&P's been going up by about 13%, right? I looked up because you want to think of the mind of a rich person, right? So here's a cool thing. When you look at, if you go study 2008 and you look at the real estate market and you look at the markets that returned the quickest, right? It was like, if you draw if you go to the wealthiest part of each major city, like Dallas, New York, London, the wealthy areas recovered the fastest, right? Because they're the ones that were close, that, like I just mentioned, self-reinforced cycle. They got assets. So banks are going to lend them money first, right? And then they're going to, like, buy what they're going to buy and hold up that value, right? They're the economic centers of an area. let's not get into what do you think that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that is what it is. And so I was like, Dallas, we're in Dallas. I wonder how much is Highland Park going up, right? That's a super wealthy neighborhood in Dallas. It's been up about 15% a year for the last 5 years. I mean, that's better than investing in the S&P 500, right? And you look at the properties that are in these wealthy areas, and like the properties in London, New York, LA, and the rich areas are perpetually up. Like one of the guys I listened to, his house is now worth $130 million. One of the smartest rich people I know in business. So property, interesting to wealthy people. And that 15% is unleveraged, right? That's not with debt. They look at Bitcoin, they go 64% a year for the last 5 years. Not bad. Tesla stock, 60%. Apple stock, 28%. MicroStrategies, which is a company that is buying a bunch of Bitcoin, 56%, right? Should I invest in projects that will grow my business? What are other business owners doing? They're thinking about what are the assets that are going to attract the most energy over this time period, or the most focused action, right? Again, mass and gravity. Which ones have the most gravity, right? The most focused action. And because past performance is not an indicator of future performance, but you look through those and you say, okay, I need to think about this, not think about the past, not think about today, but think about, all right, where's the most free markets with the most focused action, right? Where workers are excited to work, where they're going to put in time excitedly, because I want to put my money in in those things. And you want to think through, am I willing to hold on to my money in these assets over that investing time period? Because when you look at the Tesla and the Bitcoin, which was the higher relative value things over that period of time, that's because so much focused energy is going to those areas, right? But if you're rich, you're like, I don't want that volatility, right? I may just want to buy it. Like people who are super rich, mega rich, they're more interested in like S&P 500 and real estate than they for the majority of it. But they're getting interested in Bitcoin for a part of their money, this innovative type stuff, right? But that's, I'm giving you like what they're thinking through or how they're thinking through it, because since they become wealthy, they understand a lot of people understand the evolutionary learning curve of money, meaning like money evolves, money follows focused action, and so you understand that these volatile assets, they're really volatile, because if you think about the mind of the market as a mind, right? That volatility is just a manifestation of everybody's perspective changing. You know what I mean? Like we lived in a world where you didn't have a decentralized finance system that was not able to be manipulated by banks, right? Just like governments and money, and having to use the government's money system to store your value was just something that's like in the current memory of humans has always been the case. But now we have new technology that's changing that. And so like the market's mindset is shifting, right? It's not if you talk to the kids that are unaware of that previous history, right? But to the people that have the money, they're going through their own learning curve. And so that learning curve is the volatility, right? As they learn more and add more money to it, volatility goes down. But as it's going down, the price is going up, right? And so they're weighing the factors of what do I want to do? Here's the most important part when you're doing this is not, you don't have to like really estimate what you think the inflation rate is going to be over the next 5 to 10 years, because that's not really possible to know. Everybody has their own, and it's not important. You more want to think about it like, I just don't want to be at the bottom of the pack, right? So what's obvious is I don't want to invest in savings accounts, right? That's obvious, because that's the bottom of the pack. Imagine like this. Imagine it's a bear, and this bear is chasing you and a group of people, right? I know this may sound super crazy, but the bear is chasing you and a group of people. You don't have to outrun the bear. You just got to not be in the bottom of the pack, right? You know what I mean? So that's the thought process, is like the bear or the people at the center of the system that are creating the debt and the inflationary system, advertently or inadvertently, there's nothing you can really do about that, right? Because nobody's trying to, like, I'm not trying to overthrow no government, right? They're doing the best they can. I'm like that's going to be what it's going to be. I just want to do my part as an individual citizen to protect my money and the money of people that entrust me. So I'm looking at this and going, I don't want to be at the bottom of the pack, because if you're at the bottom of the pack, inflation is going to eat up your money, right? So if savings accounts are 5%, I'm pretty confident inflation is going to be more than 5% over the next decade, right? Because of everything going. Now, caveat, here's the part that's important for people, because people might think this sounds super brutal and barbaric, that, oh, you got to be at the bottom of the pack. Like, listen, like, if everyone had to be on the same learning curve, then their money couldn't be stolen through inflation, because we keep the people that run the system in check, right? Everybody, and people in the system would understand, so they wouldn't do the foolish things that they did to put us in the current situation that we're in, right? So if everything was in balance, then everything would stay in balance. But since we get to individually be in balance or out of balance, right, and those that run, you know, and all of us have an influence on each other, then you get like this imbalanced system, right? If it were perfect, then there would be no thieves, robbers, or bears that we have to outrun, right? But since it's not in balance and everybody has the free will to do it, right, you get imbalance and out of balance. And that's just part of what it is, right? And so, but the important part is those who don't keep up with the evolving system, they go broke and become a slave to the system, right? And that's why you continue to see periodic slavery throughout civilization in different forms, financial, whatever, right? It's just the financial awareness, right? So if you're rich and powerful and you have access to cheap debt, which means you can settle for less scarce assets that are less volatile because you can borrow cheaply and buy, which adds to your return, then you can survive just because you're big. Like, you don't have to get the volatile stuff, right? You can just Highland Park real estate's 15% a year unleveraged. You can buy it with leverage money, and that return becomes like 30-40% a year, right? Because you can borrow money, and you have lots of assets to do it. This is why you see Warren Buffett he's not really affected by inflation, and he's so rich, he doesn't have to even really think about Bitcoin because he's so rich. If the government took his money and he started back from scratch with his intelligence, I'm pretty confident he'd think about Bitcoin at that point in time. If you, Michael Saylor is my hero because he's a billionaire. He's the one that owns MicroStrategy, the one that I told you about, that's 56% a year. But he's been a billionaire for a long time, and his ability to evolve with the times and allow his company to evolve with the times and buy a bunch of Bitcoin with convertible debt is an amazing story. Check it out. That's probably going to be a whole podcast. But somebody like me, and a lot of people listening, like, we have to understand innovation, because I'm not getting banks lined up to give me money, right? And when this is happening, like, the smaller, you see mid-sized companies, small companies getting eaten up by large companies, because either you got cheap access to debt or you're on the fringes of innovation. Like, if you're in the middle, you're getting crushed, right? So if you're not able to get the leverage with debt, you got to get the leverage through innovation and evolution, which means you got to be up to date on the fringes. And so I don't see this as like bad. I see it as the cheat code, because those who are rich are blind to opportunities because they don't have to see it. They're going to eventually see it because they're smart, right? And or they die and their money is passed on to generations that don't have the blind spot. But like, the wealth is going to get transferred to this new generation of assets at some point. And so since there are so many rich people with so many assets and they're blind, it makes the generational transfer of wealth easy for those that understand the fringes and go hang out there with patience and excitement and belief and fun. And then, like, you know, the new lion takes over the pride over time with the help of the old lion or not, right? And so this is what humans do. Right, over and over and over again. It's how it is. I'm going to end it with this. The holy grail to good money management is to bring your income expenses into alignment, right? And alignment doesn't mean like have your income match your expenses perfect. Alignment means like there's an abundance, right? Because an abundance is the essence of wealth, which means like extra. And so if you have extra amount of money that you don't need to spend in your budget and you take it and you invest it in faster moving energy or stronger mass energy or things that are going to attract money over time, like we discussed, then you cannot help but to stay abundant, because when you have more income than expenses, you're already at abundance. And if you continue to widen the gap, you stay at abundance. So I think it's super helpful to like stop worrying about retirement for a while, just because that's not even a natural idea anyway. It doesn't align with like universal principles, and it's only like a 50-year-old idea or such. So like, forget about retirement. A lot of people like beat themselves up for not being on track for some abstract idea that doesn't even really fit within the lines of physics, right? So like, kill that idea for a second if it bothers you, and just say, my goal is to find balance in the present, right? What can I do to bring balance into my income expenses? And then what can I do to take that excess and put it into things that are changing the world and bringing balance to the world? And then over time, right, from that balance, you will maintain balance as long as in your finances, as long as you maintain this level of balance that I'm explaining. Meaning like, you get the perspective and the emotion right, and the physical expression of our desire to fall in line. I hope that makes sense. Like, just stop worrying, be present, do what you got to do, and then 20 years from now, you're going to have plenty. Hope this helps. Until next week, enjoy yourself.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.